Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to Community Conversations here on 88.5 KRFY. We air the conversations every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. with recorded interviews on local issues. Community Conversations is actually an interim show that's filling in for the morning show that usually airs at this time. The morning show will be back when we get past the coronavirus precautions that have closed our studio for live interviews. I'm the show host today, Chris Bessler. And today we have a talk with the Executive Director of the Panhandle Animal Shelter, Mandy Evans. We talk about how the shelter has fared during these past 3 months since the coronavirus caused changes in its operations. Along with the discussion of the virus impacts on animal welfare in our town, we talk about some of the shelter's innovative programs that many listeners may not know about. Those include the home-to-home adoption program that launched right here in Sandpoint, but now is in use by shelters across the country. And we also tell a bit about Mandy's weekly podcast called People Are Animals Too, Darn It. So those are today's topics in a nutshell. Here's our community conversation with Panhandle Animal Shelter Executive Director, Mandy Evans. Mandy Evans with the Panhandle Animal Shelter, thank you for talking with us today. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we want to talk about Panhandle Animal Shelter and animal welfare and other programs you have going, but let's start out with the question, how has the shelter fared through this coronavirus shutdown? And I thought maybe you could tell the story chronologically even, say from the time the virus impacts and closures really started to hit us in early March.
Yeah, so we were already having the discussion of what would happen if we had to close. So when we made the decision, we were able to really act on it. So what we did was we closed our thrift store, which was, you know, a big deal. That's a big hit for us because that's a primary fundraising or funding source. We felt uncomfortable keeping it open, thinking that we might be putting our staff and community members at risk. And then
sounds like a shelter right there.
Sorry.
You're taping this from home, but so we may hear some background noise. That's fine.
Yes. I mean, it just adds to the flair of the interview. One of the things that we did that we were really proud of is that our shelter is already primarily based within the community. So majority of our programs are community-based programs to help animals stay out of shelters. And so when this happens, we were able to continue to do a lot of that work. And we had to do a few things on the shelter side, like owner surrenders were owing urgent cases that we would bring in. Otherwise, we already have our home-to-home program and people were using that. Stray dogs we were taking in, and we were really trying to be careful about limiting the number of cats we have in the building. And then we did adoptions by appointment, and that went really well. So if you look at the scope of sheltering, there were shelters all over the country that literally took every animal in their building and put them into foster care. But what happened was they were like, well, now what? So you have, you know, some shelters have 200 animals in foster care, but they weren't doing anything. So I felt really good that we took a more proactive step. So when we went to close, we did free adoptions, and we were able to move all of the animals within our building really quickly into homes, which was amazing. And then when we did get a dog or a cat in, we had limited staff there and we did adoptions by appointment and it went really well. So I feel really good about how we as a shelter handled it. And then we also were able, like we have our Pets for Life program. So we're in the community helping people within certain geographic areas. Help them with their pets. And we were able to continue doing that work. But instead of us being door to door, knocking on doors and offering assistance, we were calling our already established clients to see how they were faring. So we primarily kept doing what we were doing.
So did you have to use foster care? And how does foster care really work?
fosters temporarily. They just take the animal into their home. We provide them with anything they need to care for the animal, so medical, food, whatever is necessary. But we had a tremendous outpouring of people volunteering to foster. It was unbelievable. And it, I mean, the whole thing, when you hear about what happened with COVID and animal welfare, that's a resounding thing throughout the nation that so many people stepped up to help animals in shelters. It just shows you that when times are bad, like, it's where people's humanity comes out, and everybody was trying to do the right thing. And for some shelters, that was great. We ended up not needing to utilize all the people who had come forward.
So now we're into stage three of the governor's reopening plan for the state. What's the plan for reopening the shelter at this point?
So right now, like, the thrift store is open. It's limited hours, so 10 to 4:30, and it's only 5 days a week. And we are working our way to getting to be into the 7 days a week and our old schedule. I'm not quite sure when that will happen. And then on the shelter side, we are now open as usual. So there are some differences in the way we operate now post-COVID, and mainly those are lessons that we learned. So the dogs, we noticed a huge decrease in stress on the dogs in our facility by not allowing the public to wander through the kennels. When you think of dogs, they're extremely social beings that now have evolved where they really rely on humans. And when you put them in a kennel and you put a barrier between them and the, you know, people, it causes a lot of stress. So when we did adoptions by appointment, we had people say what animal they were interested in seeing, and then we would arrange for them to do a meet and greet. And we found that the dogs that don't show well actually got adopted faster. So when you come to the shelter now, there's a lock on that door for families that normally would like to just go wander through the kennels. That won't be possible.
But that's for the animals' welfare.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting, your perspective that animals are so social, and we've become, basically, people are their pack now.
Yeah. Well, and they're doing a study. It's amazing work. I think it's in the Bahamas where they have a lot of feral dogs. And dogs that did not, puppies that were born and did not connect with a human. And even if that just means I know that I can go to that house and get touched, they died. So they're tracking the evolution of the canine and seeing that they really have become very dependent on humans as part of their able to survive.
Yeah, we're their social order.
Yeah.
And I see that at home with my dog. I'm his pack, no question.
I was going to say, where are you in the pecking order in that social?
I think I'm third after Sandy and Odie, yeah. I might be just as wrong ahead of the cat. That's in the dog's point of view, right?
Yeah, and I want you to know that cats haven't advanced and evolved as much as dogs when it comes to people.
Yeah. I think I noticed that.
Yeah.
So how about out in the community? This is a higher time of stresses for many, many who have lost work or income, and they're maybe struggling just to feed their own families. What kind of impacts are you seeing on animal welfare out in the community?
Well, first, I want to say that I think that I feel, well, I know that I feel very blessed to be in this community, because we're just a great community. I know that we have all these differences and all of that, but when it comes down to it, people really care. And we have had people donate so much food over this, during this crisis. It's been unbelievable. I mean, we had a delivery today. I think it was 32 bags of dog food. I mean, just unbelievable. And what we're doing with that food is we bag it and put it out for the public. And so in a year, we'll give out about 7 tons of dog and cat food. And we've definitely seen that people are needing that right now. Not only that, but we were questioning why people weren't coming to pick up food. So we started putting it on Facebook, and we realized that people were really lacking transportation and the ability to leave their house. And I think that's a big thing in our community. So we arranged where we were delivering food to families in need. So that felt good that we were able to meet that need. And then the helpline saw a huge increase in people reaching out for assistance. And we went through our entire year's budget within for that program within the first 6 months of the year, primarily due to the need that people were experiencing.
So are there food resources, pet food resources available right now?
Yes, yes.
And how would someone listening that needs help take advantage of that?
Right now, the shelter is open at noon each day, and we have a setup right when you walk in that you're welcome to go in and pick up what you need.
Okay. And the shelter is where?
At 870 Kootenai Cutoff Road in Pond Arae, just down the street from Walmart.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what other kinds of needs does the shelter have right now that if listeners are able to contribute in some way that they could help out?
Well, we desperately need volunteers in our sorting area of our thrift store. That's another area of generosity we've experienced. We actually have so many donations right now that I'm most likely going to have to stop collecting and accepting donations for a period of time for us to catch up. I think everybody's at home doing COVID, I don't know. And they claimed their house and they brought all their stuff to us, which is amazing. But it's to the point where we really need help getting through what we call the pile of all these wonderful items. So that's one way. Always donating food, dog and cat food, helps us internally, but also externally. Donations are always helpful. So I'm trying to think if I've hit all the points. I think that's it.
Yeah, money.
Money.
Big money. It takes money to do a lot of things that you can't do just with volunteers and donations. But speaking of all those things that have been donated to the store, does that mean you have some outrageous deals to be had if people want to go shopping?
Well, I was in the sorting area today, and two of the people there said, "I can't believe we're pricing this at that amount." So I think that you can guarantee that you find good deals if you come to the store.
There's always good deals, actually.
Always.
They're great. Yes. But right now, if you have a ton of stuff in there, maybe somebody listening that's looking for something, go to the Panhandle Animal Shelter thrift store. There's some great stuff in there.
That's
well,
right.
Anything else you want to tell us about the shelter right now? I got a couple of things we want to talk about, but as pertains to the animal shelter itself.
Oh, let me see. I don't think so. I just want to send a great amount of appreciation to everybody that's listening that has supported us through this. It's been really moving to have so many people step in and help.
Okay. Well, let's go on to topic two. And it's something that I bet a lot of people in town don't even know about, but you do a podcast.
I do.
And it's called People Are Animals Too, Darn It.
Yeah, I wonder who came up with that name.
Well, no. Who would be saying darn it anyways? But it's subtitled An Animal Welfare Podcast About People. So
yeah,
tell us what the podcast is about. What kind of things you talk about?
You know, I've been with the shelter for over 9 years now. And the more that I'm there, I feel like it's like that book that all your, what is it? The lessons you learned when you were in kindergarten. That's the way I feel about my time at the shelter, is that you can learn so much about life through animals and through sheltering. And so this podcast was created because I think that sometimes people who really love animals aren't very good with people and can tend to look at people as though they just don't provide them with the same amount of kindness. And I think that humans are really complex and there's a lot to, you know, we have brains and emotions and all of that gets all mixed up. And so we wanted to do a podcast to help animal people and animal welfare people to better understand the human side of it. So as an example, when you work in an animal shelter, you can get irritated or upset with people who surrender their pets. And that could be really anybody that gets upset about that. But we make an assumption that the person coming in is doing something wrong or that they're making a bad decision. But when you can pay attention to the reason, you listen, openly listen, you're not seeking judgment or negative intention. You're trying to hear the positive intention. You really learn that most people are doing what they think is right for the animal and not for themselves. So it's just the whole podcast is trying to kind of enlighten us animal people that there are people involved, like veterinarians, and why veterinarians have a high level of suicide, and why is that, and what's that about? So it's been really fun to be able, I mean, I love to talk, and I just get to talk to people and record our conversations, and I get to edit them. So if I sound like a fool, I just edit myself out.
You just take that part out.
That's right.
I would never do that, Mandy. Oh, man, a lie detector for that question. So you talk with individuals from all around the country?
Yeah. I've interviewed customer service authors, best-selling authors, veterinarians. Eric Ridgway actually has been a frequent guest. And with Eric, we talk about how to influence people, and that sometimes we feel like it's, so for example, if somebody, let's say, has their dog and it's not on a leash, it's on a, they've got a rope around the dog, that's how they're moving it. And you come up to them and tell them that they're a horrible person and they're a bad dog owner and they need to get a leash. You're pretty much cutting off any influence you're going to have with that person because their wall has just gone up and you aren't going to be able to really accomplish your overall goal, which is to provide a better outcome for the dog. But by saying, handling it differently. I think that's a really good lesson for everybody during times like that we're in right now, because there's a lot of emotion and and just realizing that if we're going to make change and influence, then we have to try to do it in a way that doesn't become divisive and turn people off. So that's what Eric joins me to talk about, things like that.
And Eric, of course, is a local guy. He's a counselor. He's been here for many years. And he counsels human people, but he's a big animal lover as well. I think he was on the animal shelter board for some years.
Yeah, he was the president of the organization when the organization changed to a no-kill shelter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that purely from his heart right there, I'm sure.
Yes.
So looking at some of the topics of some of your episodes, you got 23 episodes up. You're basically doing the podcast weekly. And for instance, this week you talked with Vince Wong of the Michelson Found Animals Foundation. So what was the topic there?
So the Michelson Found Animals Foundation is doing work to help people who are homeless, providing them with resources to care for their pets in Los Angeles. And I think with Vince, he works with municipalities to help them understand that some laws or rules might not be serving the purpose that they were meant to serve. So they're doing some pretty, I think, important work. I was talking to someone with Best Friends, actually on a podcast that hasn't been released yet. And he was talking about how these clinics down in the Los Angeles area were trying to get animals spayed and neutered because it's a big overpopulation. It's a big problem down there. But in order to have your animal spayed or neutered, you had to have like a valid driver's license or something, and you had to fill out paperwork. But there are a number of people who are they're illegal immigrants that are part of the community, but they would be really scared to come in and give people their information. And so that serves one purpose by maybe identifying people, but it still prevents the overall goal of what they were doing, which was trying to get animals spayed and neutered. And they weren't able, they weren't able to be successful because there were these barriers there on trying to identify people. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that where, you know, it's good intentions, but those good intentions might be preventing the goal of what someone's trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a lot of interesting topics here. One more I want to ask you about. Episode 16, you kind of referenced this already, is on veterinarian suicide and challenges with Dr. Pondsness, who's a local vet. So why is there a higher incidence of suicide among veterinarians?
So I do think this is an interesting subject. When you look at human health, we basically assume a right that people can get assistance. I feel like all we're talking about are these hot topics that I'm going to get in trouble for. But, you know, like if you are a low income individual and you have children, there are programs to support your family getting health care. But when you have a pet, and as we all know, veterinary medicine can be pretty expensive. So we're looking at maybe not just your routine. You go to a veterinarian and there's really no umbrella or there's anything to help you. So what happens is that you have a bunch of veterinarians that go into, or you go a bunch of veterinarians that go into veterinary medicine with the intent of helping and saving lives. And on top of that, they have the pressure of also managing a business and having to tell people, no, I'm sorry, I can't. Like, I know that that animal is the love of your life, but I can't just do things for free. And so it just starts to create a real conflict between why they got into the business and why, and then the fact of having to tell people that they can't do free services. So it becomes really emotional. And then you could be in one room where you're euthanizing a dog with a family, and then you have to pop into the next room and be fine. And so it just is a really emotional sector. And I was able to go, I was invited to go to the University of Wisconsin in February and do a class, teach a class for up and coming veterinarians. And one of the things they're really trying to teach, at least the University of Wisconsin, is this idea of optimism and understanding that people are good. So this whole idea of the podcast, that's what University of Wisconsin is trying to teach their veterinary students, is that you can't look at every case that's coming to you as though the person that's coming is bad. And really, like, again, trying to teach and help these doctors understand that people are good, and it's just that they run into challenging times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to just venture a guess that vets, maybe by their natural makeup, are more empathetic than a lot of people. So they feel these things harder, perhaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tough. Not to mention that they leave with one of the highest debts without the equal amount of pay to whatever that ratio is, that there aren't a lot of vets. It's really hard to get into vet school, and then it becomes a high demand. So there's a lot of things that nobody can just click your, you know, fingers and make better. So it does cause some anxiety and stress. And unfortunately it usually lands on the veterinarians because of the families that they see that are in pain and they can't help.
So I mentioned you have 23 episodes now of your podcast, and to rattle off just a few other topics you've talked about: technology and animal welfare, what it means to be authentic. You had a program with Dr. Marty Becker. He's a friend of the shelter, as well as a nationally known veterinarian, called Fear Free. And then you had one on mirror neurons, and I'll let people guess at what that might be. They have to go listen to it themselves. and a bunch of other topics. So people can access these on your website, which is peopleareanimals2.com. Yes. So if you want to hear Mandy Evans talking with a lot of different people on a lot of different subjects about animal welfare and about people and how that's integral to our own health as well, go to peopleareanimals2.com. And that's my little pitch for your podcast there.
Yes. Thank you, Chris.
We don't have a ton more time here, but I do want to talk about another program that is really a big one for you. And it was kind of birthed with Pan Animal Shelter, I think, and that, of course. And that's, it's called Home to Home. And it's, you started it here, but it's now launched around the nation. And Home to Home aims to help pet owners who, for any reason, are unable to keep their pets find a new home for the pets before they have to go to an animal shelter.
Right.
So, tell us what that's about.
Well, Chris, you helped us develop it. So, yeah, that was, in 2015, I think we started the development. And we started it because we wanted to be able to support people who had to surrender their pets in a different way. And we saw the pain that people went through when they had to come in and surrender. And we just knew there had to be a better way. So we created Home to Home so people that need to surrender can still work with their local shelter, but they don't have to surrender to the actual facility. So the animal never spends the night in the shelter. And it was so successful at our shelter. We saw a 33% reduction in owner surrenders and really a happy community. It's the only program I've ever done that people like interrupted me at dinner just to come over and say that they love Home to Home. So we launched it nationally and really truly nationally in May of 2018. And now, especially because of COVID, shelters all over the country literally had to close their doors. They were not able to bring animals in. And they saw the need to partner and collaborate with their community. We, for forever, animal shelters have been operating off of the idea that we need to take people's pets away, which I know that sounds horrible, but that's kind of been the way that we've processed and worked. And now it's like, no. Like we're able, when you partner with your community, we're able to do this together. And let's trust and empower our community members to help themselves. So Home to Home is right now, not all the sites are active. We're having them built, but we're in 33 shelters throughout the country. I have no idea right now how many states that is, but it's a lot. And it's been really, really exciting to have started something in Sandpoint and see it flourishing.
See, blossoming that way. So if somebody was listening and they have a pet that they can't keep for some reason, they could go to Pan Animal Shelter, PASIdaho.org, and you find a link to Home that's specific to your shelter. But if they went to home-home.org, they'd come to the website, the kind of the national presence, if you would, for the website. And they could post their cat or their dog that they need to be home right there with information about it. And somebody else looking for a pet could come along and see a pet that they like, and they could adopt that pet without it ever needing to go to a shelter, which creates, I'm sure, for animals, a lot of stress to go to a shelter.
Yeah.
And that helps avoid that. And then from the shelter's side of things, it's kind of funny when you think a shelter is really being successful when it doesn't have a lot of animals in it. That means things are, they're helping animals find homes out there in the community.
Yeah. It's a common thing when I'm speaking at conferences, people will actually say, how does your community respond to not having the cages full, and how do donors respond? And I'm like, we have got, our mindset is backwards. If we think we're successful when animals are in cages, that is not. So we used to help about 1,200 animals a year, all through the shelter. Now through the shelter, we have about 2,400 animals come in, and program wide, we help around 9,000 animals. And by the end of this year, when we count the national home to home programs that we're a part of, it's going to be a whole lot more. So we're making a huge impact on animals in the right way, not putting them in cages, but really helping. Yeah, sorry, I'm getting attacked by my dog here.
Yeah, I have the visual because we're talking via Zoom to Zoom. So your pack is wanting you some attention. So one thing about giving up an animal, I think there's some stigma that's associated with that. You know, somebody has a pet, they may dearly love that pet, and their life circumstances may change, and they may need to give it up. And I think home to home helps lessen that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it gives people a sense of hope, right? Because when you bring your animal to a shelter, you basically feel like you're letting them down. And when you find them a new loving home, you feel really good about it. It relieves a lot of stress. And people die and the family members are like, I'm allergic to cats. I mean, this just honors the person and their family members' appreciation and love for their animal by being able to rehome. It's a good thing.
So who's on your lap right now?
Juju.
What's your dog's name?
Okay, remember, I have children, so this is Juju.
Juju.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good name for a dog.
I don't even know what's going on right now. She's.
Well, anything else you want to say about home to home?
No, you know what did happen the other day that was funny is somebody that was local went, you know, we have a referral area. So if you're like, oh my gosh, I love home to home and I'm in Arizona and I'm next to my shelter and I want to refer my shelter to the home to home program. We had somebody refer us to our home to home program.
They didn't know you were already on board with it or that you started it.
Yep. Didn't know. So I thought that was kind of cute, but it's good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anything else, Mandy Evans, you'd like to say about dogs, cats, shelters, people, because people are animals too.
That's right. No, just a call out to say thank you to KRFY for always including and thinking of us. And thank you, Chris, for all the support that you show us. I appreciate you.
Okay. Well, Mandy Evans, thanks again for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
That's it for our show today. If you've just tuned in, you've been listening to Community Conversations on 88.5 KRFY and our interview with Panhandle Animal Shelter Executive Director Mandy Evans. I'm Chris Bessler. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. for more Community Conversations. If you happen to miss all or part of a show, remember you can hear the reported podcast on our website at www.krfy.org and click to our podcast page. Thanks for listening today.